Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday, Tuesday, casual Tuesday, Wednesday, casual hump day, Thursday, casual Thurs, that's what we call it, and Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, March 9th, 2018. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. Oh, it's casual Friday, folks. I'm not even wearing a soft-collared shirt. I have replaced my collar with the hoodie, I guess. And as it being casual Friday, we'll be welcoming the great Digby, Heather Parton, to the program to look back on this week and, frankly, the last 24 hours that was in the era of Donald Trump, and to help us digest more. Oh, and we got to look for some Bill O'Reilly stuff because he's back on the air. I'm not Bill O'Reilly, Dennis Miller.
Really?
Yeah, you should be looking for that right now.
Bop, bop, bop.
Andy Kindler will be with us live from Vancouver, Canada. So if you're listening from Vancouver, you better get on those tickets right now. Also on the program today, Trump accepts invitation to validate Kim Jong-un and screw up bilateral talks. Meanwhile, he signs tariff bill, alienates our allies and his allies. And will Justice Kennedy retire, and will it torpedo Democrats in 2018? Meanwhile, Democrats contemplate eliminating superdelegates altogether. And in an ACLU lawsuit, Chris Kobach proves the old saying, a lawyer who represents himself has a fool for a client. Republicans have a new gerrymander plan. And Seychelles by the African shore. I couldn't come up with anything else on that, but there was something there, folks, but it may take a couple of days. Meanwhile, super strong jobs report, wages still unmoved, however. And what can you buy for the cost of Ryan Zinke's new door at the office of the Secretary of the Interior? All this and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, it's another Friday. I am a bit sleepy. The good news is that Saul has not peed in his or my bed for 2 days. The bad news is that when he's gone to the bathroom, it is always preceded by a loud scream of, Dad! And then I've got to go in and walk him in there, and then I can't fall back to sleep. So it's one of those things. It's like that book. Good news, bad news, you know, with the haystack.
Is he testing out his Mike Flynn Jr. impression?
I swear to God it sounds exactly like that. I swear to you. And if it wasn't for the fact that it wakes me like a jolt, like literally if someone was like sticking me with a pin, I would try and record it. But by the time I'm like stumbling out of bed, banging into the walls by the time I realize even what's going on. But it's like that book. Remember that kid's book? The one with like Fortunately, Unfortunately. Does anybody know what I'm talking about?
No.
I guess it's a book from the mid-20th century. So you guys have no... But it's, you know, fortunately, the guy was, you know, had to... Unfortunately, he had to jump out of a plane. Fortunately, he had a parachute. Unfortunately, the parachute didn't open. Fortunately, there was a haystack.
That vaguely rings a bell, actually.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, there was a...
That's like an old... That's from Japan. That's like an old... maybe. Kind of saying, basically. Yeah.
All right. Great stuff.
Yeah.
All right, folks.
Very high energy Friday.
Hey, yeah. Now, this is...
I gotta go to sleep,
I'm feeling
too.
Super casual. I feel like I'm going to take a nap right now, right here.
Like our mirror neurons are getting exhausted.
Yes. Donald Trump has done a job on everyone. As you know, Gary Cohn, the total scumbag who brought us the corporate tax giveaway, the guy who saved millions upon millions of dollars by being able to tax defer his investment in Goldman Sachs as a former Goldman Sachser, by performing public service. This was under a law or an executive order signed by George W. Bush. He's pretending he's leaving because of tariffs, the White House, when in fact it's because he was overlooked as Fed chair. In similar fashion to his overlooking the fact that his boss was at least partially pro-Nazi. Right? I mean, that's a fair assessment.
Like, well, you think he cares about that?
Well, no, but I think that when he went to Scholl and had to justify it to his friends, like, Gary, what are you doing? You're supporting a guy who supports Nazis. Well, if I'm not there, the stock market will fall or something. There was something to that effect. And they were like, oh, well, okay. So he's leaving. And just for one final humiliation, Donald Trump wanted to call this guy a Jew, and he realized that's somewhat inappropriate. So good for Trump. There was not a DOJ consent decree insisting that he not call Gary Cohn a Jew on the way out the door. But he did the next best thing. If you are a member of the alt-right, if you are a neo-Nazi or a white, you know, supremacist, I guess, some of them, depending on white nationalist, you're certainly going to get what Donald Trump is getting at here.
This is Gary Cohn's last meeting in the cabinet and of the cabinet, and he's been terrific. He may be a globalist, but I still like him. He is seriously a globalist, there's no question. But you know what? In his own way, he's a nationalist because he loves our country. And, where is Gary?
Thank you, sir.
You love our country.
I do.
Wow. A lot of guys in that room.
You love
so
our
I do
country.
Even see like even the hint of a woman in there. And then what are those rockets? These projectiles that they have on the table? I just wanted to show Kim Jong-un. You got a big rocket, got a really big penis that we put in the middle of the... That's really something. So there it is. Gary Cohn heads for the exits. Will there be a new chief economic advisor? Maybe, maybe not. I mean, let's face it, folks. We have no diplomatic corps in regards to North Korea or, it appears, South Korea. So Donald Trump is completely freelancing this. Digby and I will talk about it in just a moment, but pretty impressive.
Is it possible that Trump doesn't know that globalist has come to mean Jew in many contexts?
It's possible.
Anything's possible, particularly when the Jews are
But
involved.
I'm curious as to what he thinks a globalist is.
I think he has a vague idea.
You think so? Like, what do you think he...
Yeah, I mean,
you...
he ran on economic nationalism in many ways, and the idea that globalization is bad. So I think he just thinks globalists equals bad.
I mean, it's possible.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
like
but
Jew
I don't. I mean, this is a
bad.
Guy who has as much international investment and outsourcing of as you could probably get in the context of business. And so I'm just curious, like, what he thinks Gary Cohn is a globalist as opposed to Trump. I think that he just thinks it's about tariffs. Honestly, I mean, that's the only thing that I think that he could sort of wrap his mouth like
Trump does.
Got to get into a trade war.
Yeah, I guess it's just hard for me to imagine Trump saying anything with like a hidden subtext.
No, I agree with that as well. I mean, I guess, but I also think
the
he
subtext
probably thinks,
is hidden from me too.
Oh, do I think he's explicitly saying Jew and says like, I can't say Jew, I'm going to say globalist?
Yeah.
I think he probably thinks that most Jews are globalists.
Mm.
I got to imagine
finance.
Some of that
sneaky
came through.
You know, Jew.
Jew.
Yeah, I guess it's not that subtle. Never mind.
No,
it's not really that subtle.
Meanwhile, Donald Trump held a press conference with steelworkers, trying to imply that there's going to be some type of massive job growth in the steel industry in this country. There may be a nominal growth in the jobs, maybe a couple thousand nationally, maybe you could actually get through five figures, to five figures. I doubt it. But certainly he's not hosting those people who rely on steel, second order products. They're not coming to the White House because they're worried they're going out looking for new jobs. But here's Donald Trump showing just how connected he is to these steel workers.
Many of the countries that treat us the worst on trade and on military are our allies, as they like to call them. So we just want fairness.
Military.
We just want fairness. Yes. Well, your father, Herman, is looking down. He's very proud of you right now.
Well, he's still alive.
He is? Well, then he's even more proud of you. Then he's even more proud.
So
anybody
excited.
Else, please, come on up.
So excited about that joke.
Let's arm wrestle. Come on.
Dude, your dad isn't dead, so he's even more happy, Joe. That's classic.
Classic stuff.
We're not in the outer boroughs.
On military. What does he phrase it? Like,
he says
on trade, on military.
But also on trade.
Wait, are you a working person? Doesn't everybody die at like 50 then? How is your dad still alive?
You're not dead.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Digby.
Have a heart, have a heart.
have a heart, 16666, and I know the part. You are the river flow, and we can never know. We're just the weather man, you make the wind blow. Keep thinking about every straight face, yes. Wonder what your boyfriend thinks about your braces. What about them? I'm all about them. Six such straight A's, cut them in the bathroom. So this is it, fun.
We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. Always a great pleasure to welcome back to the program the proprietor of the Uber blog Hullabaloo, writer at Salon.com, Heather Parton or Digby. Hello, Heather. How are you?
Hey, Sam. I'm fine. How are you doing?
I'm a little sleepy, like we said, off the air. I don't know an era in my life where I said TGIF more often and less ironically than now. But be that as it may, some big news yesterday. And it was very odd how we sort of heard of it, because there doesn't seem to be any sort of infrastructure for our diplomatic corps in regards to the Korean Peninsula, right? Like, I mean, it just seems like some low-level folks are standing around waiting to figure out what they're supposed to do. And it was announced that Donald Trump, and I think it from South Korea, was going to meet or was willing to meet with Kim Jong-un. And I don't know. This is, I mean, it's sort of exciting. It's also sort of nuts.
Well, it's, you know, look, it's nuts. I mean, that it's nuts. And yeah, I mean, everything about Trump is sort of exciting on a certain level, but this is nuts. Now, that's not to say that in the right hands that having negotiations and talks with North Korea is a bad idea. Obviously, it is preferable to what we've been hearing, which is the bloody nose strategy, right? Just, you know, we'll just bomb them a little bit, and
right,
then they'll capitulate. So, you know, this is a better delaying tactic, if nothing else, right? Putting off the inevitable day when something really, really terrible happens under Trump. So, I'm not against it. But yes, of course, this just happened on some kind of an ad hoc basis. And remember, you know, Kim and his father had made this offer many times to different American presidents. You know, hey, let's meet, let's talk. And part of the reason for that is that it really does add to his prestige. He becomes a very, very important world leader, right? He meets with the president, and you know that Trump is, there's going to be all this, you know, great elaborate kind of staging of the whole thing, because that's how Trump does it. And, you know, this is going to be a big deal. It's a big deal for Kim. It puts him on a different level than he's ever been before. And of course, you know, there were good reasons why American presidents in the past had declined that for that reason, trying to sort of contain this into a, you know, and sort of a low-level threat and keep everything kind of, you know, downplay it to the extent that they could, because it is a very dangerous thing. They want to keep the temperature down, right? You don't want things to get too, they didn't used to want things to get out of hand. So, you know, this is not, you know, Trump is kind of, they're kind of portraying this as, oh, only, you know, Trump has brought him to this point and now he's ready to meet. That's not true. They've been wanting to meet with an American president for a very long time. So, you know, now CNN, you know, they're calling Trump the unpredictable art of the deal president.
Oh,
you know,
my God.
You know, I mean, it's really sickening. So, you know, he's getting, you know, he managed to change the conversation, which he, you know, is good at doing. Whether or not it stays changed, I would suspect after this amount of time, we know that it won't stay changed, because, you know, Trump is always, there's always something new going on with the guy. But, you know, in some ways, Maybe. I mean, maybe he will be able to do something. Now, it would be really helpful if diplomats and other experts and people who knew what they were doing would be preparing him for this, but we know that he can't be prepared. He can't read a briefing book. He can't learn anything that he hasn't known. So if something good comes out of this, it will be an accident. But I guess, you know, what are we going to do? You know, we have no choice. We have to hope for the best. And, you know, in some ways, only Trump could do this, because if it weren't Trump, if it were Obama or even George W. Bush, remember in 2005 they had six-party talks with, you know, Japan and China and Russia, and, you know, they were trying to contain this nuclear threat. And the right wing had a fit. They went nuts on Bush, and it was, you know, you're selling us out. I mean, this... it's a Nixon goes to China kind of thing, right? Only the guy who won't be, you know, baiting everybody else can be the one to do it. So, you know, I mean, I guess I'm hopeful, I guess.
Well, I mean, let's just head down that path for a moment, this Nixon, because it's a Nixon-China dynamic, but it really is the question... There is a problem in terms of Democrats' ability to wage diplomacy, I guess, is the best way to put it, in that, you know, and we say this many times, right? If Barack Obama had said what Donald Trump said yesterday, if Barack Obama had done that thing at a press conference like Donald Trump did last night, these would be month-long investigations by the Congress. In this instance, Democrats just, they can't get away, and get away is the wrong way. It's much harder for them to maneuver in this. And I wonder, I mean, part of that, I think, is a function of the Democrats being weak, and I don't mean in terms of like not non-aggressive. I just mean weak in terms of having some type of bench in terms of foreign policy, and they end up acting extremely defensive, and in those instances make stupid moves, I guess. I mean, what, you know, a Democratic president could never say like, oh, we're going to go meet with them with no preconditions. Right? I mean, there would be congressional resolutions and investigations, and we would see CNN, you know, talking about how controversial this is, as opposed to like, he's an edgy deal maker or she's an edgy, you know what I mean?
Right. Well, I mean, look at how Trump and all of these right-wing Republicans, and I shouldn't say all Republicans because there has been a divide on this, but I'm going to talk about the Iran deal. I mean, this is Trump who, you know, throughout the time he's been, you know, campaigning and in office, has been excoriating Obama over the Iran deal. And largely, you know, we gave him money and we didn't get our hostages back and all this other stuff. Now, presumably, he thinks that he's going to go to North Korea. And I guess he's going to get Kim Jong-un to bow down, admit that he is, you know, Trump's puppet, and give him everything he wants. I mean, that's absurd, of course. That's not going to happen. But imagine if he did say, okay, we'll lift the sanctions, and then, you know, you only get to keep half of your nuclear arsenal, or, you know, some whatever kind of compromise. And by the way, this is a far, far, far more complicated deal, a complicated situation than Iran ever was. Iran didn't have nuclear weapons. You know, Kim Jong-un does. And, you know, he's sitting there with a lot of leverage. And Donald Trump understands none of it because he's an effing moron. So the idea that he's going to go in there with no preparation and come out with a, you know, a deal that is better than what the Obama administration got on Iran is completely laughable. It's impossible, actually. It's impossible. So, you know, we're talking about a situation where even the person who, you know, it condemns the Democrats for trying to do some kind of a deal. And it's not just, you know, I mean, his whole shtick was, all of our politicians make terrible deals. I'll make good deals. That's what I do. I'm a deal maker, right? And he hasn't made any deals. None. Zero accomplishments in that particular realm. So, you know, this is a big problem for the left. Well, I shouldn't say the left, for Democrats. I mean, even you know, moderate Republicans who might want to do something. You know, and this goes way, way back, Sam, as you well know. You know, I mean, we're talking back to the Cold War, you know, who lost China arguments and stuff like that. So, I mean, this continues to be a huge problem where you have this right-wing, you know, super hawks, and plenty of Democrats have been in that realm as well, less so today than there used to be, but they still exist. And, you know, it hamstrings the American foreign policy for doing anything reasonable. I mean, you look at the Iran deal or the Paris Accords. Those were, in my view, you know, accomplishments in Obama's term. And it was pulling teeth to get that done. And,
they're not hailed.
Look what happened.
They're not hailed. Yeah. I mean, if you sort of just look at the early coverage of somehow this is amazing that Donald Trump is going to sit down with Kim Jong-un. And like you've made the point that this invite has basically been open. There's been an open invite to do this. The point is that the United States could never get concessions before it sits down because, as you mentioned, the sitting down with the president is a value. Particularly to a guy, you know, a country that has been outside of the international community and to a country where the people living there probably, you know, you can't eat pride, but they certainly get served it, and the idea that like Kim Jong-un is validated by the president of the United States probably makes his leadership a little bit easier to maintain. And so this has value.
And think of their relationships with the other countries there. I mean, there was no consultation with Japan or China or South Korea or anybody about this. So, I mean, how do they even know how they feel about it? I mean, this is, you know, these are complicated relationships. The idea that he would just do this off the cuff, they called us up and said, will you meet? And I said, yes. I mean, hey, you could tell by the look on Rex Tillerson's face, you know, kind of, oh, Jesus. Oh, my God.
Well, we should say.
What am I going to do?
Tillerson has actually, I guess, maybe it was this morning, released a statement saying that they're meeting. But it's not like a meeting is basically what he was trying to say.
They're talking, but they're not negotiating.
Right. They're just hanging out. There's no negotiations. We're not starting. Yeah, here it is. Talks, but no negotiations. Tillerson said on Friday that Trump will be holding talks, not negotiations with Kim Jong-un. Tillerson on Friday said, President Trump has said it for some time that he's open to talks and he'd be willing to meet with Kim when conditions were right. I think the president's judgment, the time has arrived now. I wonder what it was that Kim Jong-un has done that made conditions right.
I don't know. Gosh, I don't know. It seems like, you know, maybe Trump was feeling a little under the stormy weather. I don't know.
No, the problem is there was no Black basketball players who were saying anything. So I had to find something else to do.
Maybe he'll bring Dennis Rodman.
Football season
is
over. So I can't. This is, the fact that Tillerson is, trying to already downplay it a little bit, but this has sailed on some level, right? Like, this is going to set up a whole a natural progression of thing. And, you know, look, I think in the end of the day, if there was possible that there could be peace on the Korean Peninsula and it involved us taking our troops out and whatnot, I'm all for it. It's just that there has to be, one has to imagine that this is complicated and that there's a lot of different complicated forces that are acting upon this. And the massive vacuum, not only of leadership by the United States, you know, in the form of Donald Trump, but there's not really a diplomatic apparatus associated with the Korean Peninsula coming from the United States now, is there?
No. I mean, we don't have a South Korean ambassador. The State Department's top expert on this topic and you know, the top Korean diplomat who'd been there for 30 years and really, you know, had a full, you know, all the experience anyone would require, he's leaving. And there is really nobody. I mean, you know, I guess we're depending on the oil man Rex Tillerson to be the guy who knows what he's doing on this. I mean, this is very, like I said, if anything good comes out of this, it will be an accident. Because there's no way that there is any kind of strategy or any level of deep knowledge going into whatever these, you know, talks, not negotiations are. And it's Donald Trump who is completely clueless. Now, I could see Kim. I understand that they're going to meet in, if they meet, if this actually happens, that they'll meet in some kind of neutral territory. That's what I heard discussed on CNN this morning.
I think it was a McDonald's. Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, they
get a
can
big
share a little
garbage scow and
a
put a McDonald's on it, and we meet there in the Korean Sea.
Yeah, I mean, I had sort of had a picture in my head of Trump showing up in Pyongyang and them putting on one of the big, you know, military parades.
Yeah.
Oh, I like that, you know.
Exactly.
Look what they did for me. It's the best. It's the biggest, you know. But apparently that, you know, if this happens, that won't be happening. And I think that is part of, you know, that would be disturbing to Trump. I mean, I think what Trump wants out of this, obviously, is, you know, all the big international attention and have it be a big show and have him being feted by Kim and, you know, by this mortal enemy, you know, which he will perceive as he did with Xi in China. You know, oh, look what they did for me. They love me, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
And I don't think he can get that out of this. I mean, I don't think even the Trump administration can pull off sending the president of the United States to Pyongyang. I just don't think that can happen. So I don't know. And you know, look, and they want to do this immediately, right? I mean, this is what he's saying, they'll meet in May, which is completely and utterly absurd. But, you know,
I should have that'll give me time to read a couple of pages. You can spread it out.
Watch like little Fox and Friends. Say about it.
Well, actually, I mean, I'm glad you raised that, Digby, because I'm sure Donald Trump is watching Fox News to see how his overtures to North Korea are playing. And here is Donald Trump's chief advisor, or one of his chief advisors, I guess. It's been reported. Sean Hannity on Fox News. This is where he is delivering the news.
All right, the media liberals, they're looking like complete fools tonight because they are once again turning out to be completely wrong about President Trump. The commander-in-chief's leadership is now leading to a major foreign policy breakthrough as it relates to North Korea. This is what we call peace through strength in action. The president is causing little Rocket Man to back down. Now, it's something that President Barack Obama, other presidents all failed to do. Now, President Trump's tough words, his actions, are now starting to yield positive results. And hopefully this will end in the protection of America and, of course, the world and the region in particular. Now, Trump's extremely tough sanctions, they have now backed Kim Jong-un into a corner. He was forced to capitulate. Now, it's a long way to go. We've got to be cautious, trust but verify. But meeting with Kim Jong-un under the pretense that he will stop all nuclear missile testing, this is a good start.
Did he say the pretense?
Wow. You know, I mean, it's unbelievable. Somebody should go back and see what Sean Hannity had to say about previous.
Oh, yeah. There's no doubt in my mind. Wait a second. I want to pull that back up. I want to see that last line because I think he accidentally basically just gave up the ghost here as to what Kim Jong-un is doing. I'm quite convinced he just said here he's going to meet with Donald Trump under the pretense that he's going to give up. Here we go.
Extremely tough sanctions. They have now backed Kim Jong-un into a corner. He was forced to capitulate. Now, it's a long way to go. We've got to be cautious, trust but verify. But meeting with Kim Jong-un under the pretense that he will stop all nuclear missile testing, this is a good start.
Right. Sean Hannity has nailed it.
Yeah, I think so. That's what you call what do they call it? A Kinsley gaffe?
Yeah, exactly.
Where someone, you know, accidentally tells the truth.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
The subtext is the text in this instance. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people I think who seem to be concerned, and you know, hopefully it's something positive coming. But that there's nothing. It's highly unlikely that Kim Jong Un says, "Okay, we've met now. Now I'm going to stop, you know, testing these things." It seems highly unlikely, but like you say, Donald Trump is going to be heading into this meeting with no sense of how he's going to be used and what this does in terms of allowing China to basically say, we're going to back off any type of sanctions because, look at the level of reasonableness that we're seeing now. And, you know, it's one thing to sanction these guys to bring them to the table, but they're at the table. They're not, you know, they're eating maybe a different food and maybe they're playing cards instead of having dinner, but they're at the table. And so this is all speculation, but there's concern that this is really just sort of an exit strategy for China. And then if China exits this sort of the rhetorical and the performative isolation of North Korea, then there will be no checks on North Korea going forward. So I guess there's a lot to be lost here. There's a lot to be gained. But again, you have to bet on the Trump administration, which seems to be woefully inadequate in terms of the task.
Well, of course, it's woefully inadequate. You're being very kind in putting it that way.
Well, it's They're casual Friday. Morons. I don't want
to. I mean, you
yes,
know,
they're
let's
idiots.
Face it. I mean, it. Look, this is, like I said, and I keep saying it, something good could come of it because the situation is putting us in, you know, I mean, you can flip a coin. You can just, you know, pray. I mean, whatever it is that you hope for might happen just out of pure coincidence. But the idea that Trump is going to meet with Kim Jong-un and they're going to have some meeting of the minds and Kim is going to, you know, decide that it's really in his best interest to get rid of all of his nuclear weapons. And by the way, it allows the people in to inspect the entire country and make sure, because, of course, that would have to be part of it. And that, you know, that suddenly he just has a complete change of heart, is totally and completely moved by something that Donald Trump said to him and does all this. I mean, I guess it's theoretically possible, but let's just say it's unlikely.
Yeah, I mean, it really does make you wonder what, I mean, if these guys are just like, oh, somebody got to Kim Jong-un and said, you realize you can totally play this guy.
Of course. He may have just seen it. I mean, he watches, you know, TV. He can see how easily, or watches what Trump's behavior in China. You know, I mean, and look at it this way, too. I mean, and you and I have talked about this before. One of the things that Kim has seen, and he's not the only one in the world, has seen that if you do give up your nuclear weapons, if you negotiate in good faith on that level, what happens is the United States invades your country. That's the lesson of the last few years from Iraq, Libya. I think that Kim has probably noticed that. And I think that it makes it, you know, this isn't just Trump's fault. This is the United States' fault, right? I mean, we did this thing. And now the lesson is clear to someone like Kim. He's not ignorant. I mean, people look at him and think, well, this guy's, you know, he's a little, you know, intellectually undeveloped or something. But I don't think that's true. I mean, I don't think he's an idiot, and I think he can see. And that's why he's been doing what he's doing. And he looked at Trump's behavior in China. He probably is very well aware that the dotard is completely incapable of doing anything. And he has no intention of giving up his nuclear weapons. I guess that's what I'm saying. That's not going to happen. So, and Trump apparently has no intention of trying to work on some containment strategy. He wants, you know, it's all or nothing.
Containment.
So I don't know where that goes, you know.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how much panic there is within the administration Or within, I should say, you know, maybe the State Department between now and then, right? I mean, we've seen Tillerson already coming out and saying, like, they're talks, not negotiations. We're not really
a little chat.
We're not fully at negotiations. And you know, you imagine the people bringing the briefing book to Donald Trump, and having spent, you know, whatever, 5, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years of their career, sending stuff up the pipeline to the president on, in terms of like intel and understanding of North Korea, and, you know, handing it to this dude and him just looking at it going like, there's no pictures. So I don't know what it says, is a little bit terrifying, but, I guess hope springs eternal.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's move from that, because it's been, you know, a crazy week, and I have touched on this. I'm just curious about your theory about Stormy Daniels, because my operating theory has been for about a month or so now, basically since the story about, Stephen Cohen being the one to pay her off, prior to the election, to keep her quiet. I've been operating under the theory that this is not about the election, because, you know, does anybody think that there's a single vote that's going to be lost because this guy had an affair with an adult film worker, or anybody else for that matter? I don't think that, and I don't think they were worried about that. And certainly we found out this week that Michael Cohen was trying to suppress her speech now. So the idea that it was about the election doesn't make as much sense, right? I mean, he's been elected. Why, you know, you had this stuff floating around there. Now exactly would be exactly the time that you would want it released, right? Because you don't want it closer to the election in 2020 if he's going to rerun. My operating theory has been that there's a prenuptial agreement between Donald Trump and Melania, and it says something that she gets a massive payout if X happens, and Donald Trump knows that X happened with Stormy Daniels. Now, some people are saying, is there a paternity test involved in this? It was there, you know, like an abortion, or, you know, I feel like it could be any of those that, you know, probably are the dividing line is like, no, you know, no intercourse, or no intercourse without protection. And if there's evidence that arises that he broke that, then I would imagine there's a document that says Melania gets like some extraordinary amount of money for divorcing him. I don't know, $50 million, like one of those jobbies, or $100 million. But what's your take on what's going on here?
Well, I find your theory very intriguing, and that may very well be what it is. I mean, just on the, you know, the marriage angle alone, this is not good. I mean, you know, Trump could deny, he, you know, Melania came out after the Access Hollywood tape, and she did an interview, and she said, well, it was boys talk, you know. And she didn't, you know, she pretended not to take it seriously. He claims that all these women are lying. They were just trying to stop him from being elected. She chose to believe that. But, you know, this is an affair, and right. It's an affair with a porn star. Different thing. You know, that's a different, you know, consensual relationship that if Stormy Daniels has proof, and that may be the case, there may be something, you know, according to the non-disclosure agreement, there, it's so specific that you have to wonder. I mean, maybe that's just Trump boilerplate for every non-disclosure agreement with a porn star that he has.
Right.
And I'm sure there's many. But
Google has a template for that anyway, so.
Yeah, right, of course. You know, but there is some, you know, some suspicion that perhaps she has something, some kind of proof that they did have an affair, that there was something going on. And so perhaps, you know, even if there was no prenup in any marriage, that would cause a bit of a strain to find out that your husband was having an affair with a porn star 4 months after you gave birth to his, you know, to your son. So that's kind of an ugly thing to begin with. But I don't think Trump cares about that. I don't think that it would just be because, oh, my wife will be upset. I don't think he cares if she's upset. I just don't think that that's part of it. So I tend to think more what you're saying, that there was big money involved. And from what we understood from the Michael Wolff book, Fire and Fury, Melania was very seriously contemplating divorce. It had the election gone the other way. She was getting ready to leave him, and there have been rumors that she has a, you know, an affair of her own, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, maybe that was what it is. I mean, maybe that was all it was. I'll tell you, though, there's something about this that's different than all the rest, right? Trump has always denied this stuff. He's always said, they're gold diggers. They're all lying. They're women, they're all liars. They're all a bunch of liars. And he was going to sue all the women who accused him of assault and harassment. There's something different about this. There's a reason why Michael Cohen has gone so far to keep this quiet. And whether or not it's this prenup business, right, or it's something that Stormy Daniels knows about Trump, that if it got out would be dangerous to him. And, you know, I don't know what that is. I do know that she's an adult film star, so she's not a person who would be, you know, sexually shy. I don't know if you've read this, in the new book that's coming out by Michael Isikoff and David Korn, which explores Trump's Russia connections. It's called Russian Roulette. I haven't read the book, but I've read the excerpts that have been coming out this week. And one of the stories, just a little tiny anecdote. Do you remember when Trump met the Agalarovs in Las Vegas? There's a picture of them meeting there with Rob Goldstone and all that stuff. This was, before the 2013 Miss Universe pageant, and okay, they were making their deal. There's a picture of them meeting in Vegas at some, and they had a dinner. And there's Michael Cohen is there, the Agalarovs, the son and the father.
Remind people who that is, Agalarov.
Right. These are the Russians who, he's a real estate magnate. His son is a budding pop star. And they were among the financiers of the Miss Universe pageant coming to Moscow in 2013. They've been great friends with Trump. And they were also involved in that infamous Trump Tower meeting in June of 2016 with Trump Jr., Jared, and Manafort to provide dirt on Hillary Clinton.
Right, from the lawyer ostensibly talking about adoption.
Exactly. And it was the son, Emil Agalarov, who is the budding pop star. His, quote, publicist, Rob Goldstone, who we have not heard enough about him yet, he was the one who set up the meeting. And he was also at this dinner in Las Vegas. He was very much involved with Trump, Keith Schiller, the rest of them during the Miss Universe pageant in 2013. In any case, in this Vegas meeting, this is something that this is just a little anecdote that stuck out to me. The Agalarovs are there, Goldstone's there, they have this dinner with Trump, and later that night they are going to go out clubbing, and they're going to go to this place called The Act, and it was in one of the hotels, I can't remember which one. And Trump calls them up and says he wants to go along, make room for him. So they do. They go to this thing, and there are pictures of it, of him standing in front, the sort of in the red carpet thing where you get your picture taken with celebrities going into a club in Vegas. And there are pictures of him with the Agalarovs in the club that night that were on Instagram. This club, as it turns out, was infamous for its, let's just say, extreme sort of sexual pageant.
Matt has put up the excerpt on the screen right now, and it says the club featured semi-nude women performing simulated sex acts of bestiality and grotesque sadomasochism, skits that a few months later would prompt a Nevada state judge to issue an injunction barring any more of its lewd and offensive performances. Among the club's regular acts cited by the judge was one called Hot for Teacher, in which naked college girls simulate urinating on a professor. In another act, two women disrobe, then one female stands over the other female and simulates urinating while the other female catches the urine in two wine glasses.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that rang any bells with you.
Well, it did. Not one I'd like to talk about. I mean, I've had some...
I know.
Great work. I really liked it.
I wasn't suggesting that, Sam.
I was super surprised about the two wine glasses. That was the part that I really... Yeah, okay, so maybe... Now, when ostensibly did this, did the P-tape supposedly happen? When did that...
Well, this act, the act, nobody knows whether they performed the Golden Showers routine that night,
right.
But they had... It was during the period when they were performing the Golden Showers routine. It was after that that the Miss Universe pageant was held, and that Trump was in Moscow, and ostensibly, according to the Steele dossier, there were people who said that this event where the girls urinated on the bed that the Obamas had slept in happened. Now, you know, I don't, maybe this is all coincidence, but it occurs to me that if the Agalarovs were there and they saw Trump, and who knows what Trump might have said to them about this particular thing,
that's my
or whether
favorite
they observed
scene.
Him being deeply interested in this particular thing, or what. But it just seems to me, and I'm sure that Isikoff and Korn both put it in the book for this purpose, which is to
right.
sort of, you know, look, so you've got Trump and who is going to great lengths to shut down any discussion with an adult film star who is, as I said, undoubtedly not sexually shy or one who would, you know, be unwilling to do certain things. Then you have this, and then you have the rumors about him in
Oh, I see where you're going. So
Moscow.
You're suggesting that maybe the concern is that Stormy Daniels is going to talk about one of the things she's done was pee in a cup or something like that.
Exactly.
But
something.
You know, here's why I think it's possible, but here's why I'm a little skeptical that's the reason why they've been so adamant about her, because in October when they first kept her quiet, there was no wide awareness of the P-tape, was there? Wasn't this something that came out after the election? And so the urgency to keep Stormy Daniels from talking predates the public awareness of the P story. And I think it was coincidental with the election, because that's when people were interested in talking to Stormy Daniels. We already know the stuff about the affair. That's why I'm convinced it's a prenup thing. With Trump, I just think at the end of the day, the guy is so shameless. It's just always about money. And I think it's just, you know, he's afraid it's going to cost him money.
Well, I'm sure that's true, too. I mean, I'm sure that's true, too. I just have a feeling that, you know, there's some reason to believe that, you know, I mean, and I don't care, by the way, you know, I don't care what his sexual habits are. It really is. In fact, the mere thought of it is repulsive to me to even contemplate it on any level. But I could imagine that being something that he wouldn't want to come out, regardless of whether or not the Steele dossier was known. Now, presumably, if this did happen in Moscow, Trump knows it happened in Moscow. and Trump knows probably that they know it happened, if it did.
Right.
So I would, you know, this may have been in the back of his mind, regardless of the Steele dossier or the Russian investigation, that this thing that's out there is something that he has to be aware of. In any case, look, just think about what we're talking about here. We have a president who is so open to blackmail on so many different levels from so many different people that it's impossible to know what his motivations are for anything, not to mention the fact that he's greedy and corrupt.
Right.
So you know, whatever he does, we can never assume he's doing it out of anything other than some kind of personal motivation, you know, for his own or his family's benefit. And I mean, I've never seen anything like this. But that is, of course, the oligarch model, isn't it?
Right. Of course. And the other part of that model is like all of my family's in on it, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like we're going to have like all the kids.
Exactly.
And, you know, if we could get the grandkids in this, like sort of like a 529 type of program. So you don't have to use it for education, but it's all tax free.
Yeah. I mean, you know, look at what's happening with the son-in-law. I mean, you know, his favorite daughter. She kind of, you know, she married a she married someone very much like her daddy. I mean, big surprise, right?
Yep.
And, you know, we've got all this stuff with Jared. And, I mean, the story that came out about him actually having meetings in the White House with people who later gave his family half a billion, that's B with a, you know, billion with a B, a half $1 billion in loans. And this was not something that you would have expected from this particular group.
Yeah, it was one of the biggest loans they had ever given, I think, the biggest. Look, government's just another way of saying coincidence. That's all. All right, well, lastly, listen, we're running a little late here, but I just catch us up on the seashells thing, because that also is pretty extraordinary. I mean, Eric Prince is another one of these guys who he and Bannon were trying to pitch the administration actively, the military, of like privatizing the entire force in Afghanistan and paying for it by essentially extracting all of the natural resources to the extent that there are any in Afghanistan, I guess, through mining. You know, having that direct, basically setting up a private army. It is their idea was, I almost want to say it was a remedial, like it was like a throwback to the Roman Empire. Like it was so basic.
Oh, it literally was.
Which is not to say
pitching it, pitched it as the British East India Company with himself, and he called himself viceroy. I mean, he literally did that.
Yeah, at least now there's more nuance when we invade a country and there's like pretense. This was just sort of like full on extraction model. And, but it turns out, so, just walk me through this very briefly before we go. What supposedly happened in the Seychelles, and why is that important?
Well, I will say right up front that I don't know what the nefarious deeds that may have happened at the Seychelles were, but we knew about this meeting some months back. That Eric Prince, who is much closer to the Trump family than I think people understood, Prince was with the family on election night in their private suite. He and his wife were there. She Instagrammed it. So they have a very close relationship. And Eric has been all over this administration in various ways, right? I mean, he's sort of their dark ops guy, I think. And during this period in the transition when Kushner's meeting with Russians, Sessions is meeting with Russians, Flynn is talking to Russians, it's Russians, Russians everywhere, Prince takes off for this meeting in the Seychelles Islands with the Crown Prince an emissary from the Crown Prince of the United Arab Emirates, which, by the way, is where Prince lives, so he didn't have to go to the Seychelles to meet them, a representative of a Russian bank, and this guy by the name of George Nader, who had been some kind of a player in Middle East politics back in the 90s and the early 2000s. Then he kind of disappeared. Nobody knew what happened to him, and suddenly he showed up again. He has it's just been reported this last week that Nader came to the United States in January. He was stopped at the airport by the FBI, where they took his electronics, questioned him for hours, as he was on his way to Mar-a-Lago to celebrate the first year of the Trump administration, which was kind of a private party. That wasn't something that everybody in the country was invited to, right? You know. Yep. So George Nader, he gets stopped by the FBI. He is now cooperating with Mueller and has testified before the grand jury. We don't know why, but it has been reported that he said that that meeting was arranged as a back channel between the Trump administration and the UAE and the Russians, that the UAE was you know, the sort of the go-between. And this guy Nader was go-between, too. Now, what's significant about that is that Eric Prince lied his ass off about it before the House Intelligence Committee and said, oh, it's all just a coincidence, another coincidence. Just happened to be there. We had, you know, we ran into each other. I had a drink. It was half an hour. That was that. You know, just total coincidence. There was nothing planned about it. This guy Nader, to the extent we know what happened there, it's that this was an actual planned meeting for a back channel. Now, what we don't know is why they wanted this back channel. And there's a lot of speculation that this had to do, since there was a Russian banker involved, that this may have had to do with money being funneled into the Trump campaign from the Russian government. and that this was the meeting at which the quo for the quid was being discussed. What do we need from you? We helped you out. We did what we said we were going to do. We got the dirt on Hillary. We did the Facebook stuff. Now this is what we need in return. And at least that's what's being speculated. And we don't know why they wanted some of these back channels. This is a very, very big open question.
That's the equivalent of that moment when one of the little old widows in the producers knocks on the door and asks Max Bialystock, our play is a hit. Where's our money? That's basically it,
that's
right?
Exactly right. Exactly right. And, you know, no one expected to win, but, you know, they got it. And so here we go. So and so there's a lot of, there are many open questions. But the big question is, they wanted all these back channels in the transition. The Trump administration was going to be in the White House within weeks. There was no reason for them to be doing that, especially the way that they went about doing it. And then they all lied about it. They lied about it to everybody.
I would love, no, it didn't happen. I would love Prince to go to jail for anything.
Oh,
and nobody deserves it more than that dude, frankly. Yeah. Well, maybe there's others who deserve it more, but he's certainly way
he's
up there.
He's up there.
All right. Well, Heather, thank you so much for wrapping up the week and catching me up on a couple of stories. I mean, these days it's just impossible to follow all of it, and I
Absolutely.
Appreciate your walking us through that. have a great weekend. Get some rest.
You too, Sam. Thanks. My pleasure. Talk to you later.
All right, folks, check out Hullabaloo every day. And, of course, Heather's writing on Salon.com. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Andy Kindler will be here. And, well, not here. He'll actually be not only across the country, but in a different country. 646-25, what am I? All right, we're not quite there yet. That is a cliffhanger. You're going to find out in a moment. We'll be right back. We are back. Sam Seder, this is the Majority Report. Ladies and gentlemen, it is a casual Friday. And one of the ways that we inject a little adrenaline, the way that we put Casual Friday on steroids, it's like Casual Friday on acid, as we play this tune.
With a Jew like Andy Kindler, you know you can't go wrong. His ancestors wrote the God Bless America song. A true Obama bot, and he believes Obama can never be wrong.
You're damn right again, bitch.
And AndyKindler.com. You made me laugh so hard. I had to write your theme song, Andy Kindler.
Wow, you are on fire today.
Yeah, I just took some. I'm studying with Sam Harris, not the guy, not the the conservative idiot, but the old singer from the show America. What's that show? God damn it, I'm off. What was the show with Ed McMahon?
You were so the Johnny Carson show?
No, Star Searcher. There was a guy named Sam Harris, and he sang "Somewhere Over the Rainbow." So one day I was mad at Sam Harris, and I sent the wrong Sam Harris the thing, and he blocked me. like, does he really think I thought he was an anti-Muslim bigot?
Wait a second. So you were launching a broadside at Sam Harris, the anti-Muslim bigot, but instead you launched it to Sam Harris, the elderly singer from Community Audition or whatever it was?
Oh, he's the guy who is the Lawrence Krauss apologizer. Apologist. Sort yourself out, bucko.
Wow.
You know that one?
No. What is that?
Sort yourself out, bucko. It's because you're a Jew with glasses, which cues cock behavior.
Oh, my God. Is this
in
Mandela?
A primitive history.
No, that's not.
No, I'm trying to. I can't do the Peterson voice yet. But I do like the idea of Mandela Peterson, which is like, clean your room. Why do girls wear rouge? It's an evolutionary cue. What happened to the individual? You know, I just look at these young men masturbating and I get so sad.
Andy, yeah. You realize, Andy, that we have a crisis of masculinity in this country, right?
I mean, just in my pants. Well, is that not good? I should have waited on
no,
that.
No, that's
okay,
why
I
wanted to make this a little bit, you know, every week that we have you on. We don't have you on every week, but we would love to. But
did you sound frightened.
But but when we do have you on.
I have you recorded, Sam. You clearly said to your viewers that you would have me on every week. Wrong?
Now, Andy, we have you on, you know, whenever we have you on, it's always a non-confrontational interview.
Right. I don't like that. I don't like confrontation. I don't like talking about people and Louis C.K.
That's right. And we have no confrontation. However, we're going to call you to the carpet today.
Oh, no.
We're going to
oh,
do...
Oh, no.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Is it my comeuppance?
Well, it very well may be. I'm sure you're familiar with Chad Prather. He's a comedian. You're a comedian.
No, I don't know Chad. Should I? Is he on that right wing station with YouTube Right? It's called or YouTube.
No,
conservative?
Chad Prather is a comedian and conservative blogger who is on tour, talking about how there is a bemoaning the triumph of the beta male, and here he was on Fox and Friends. And here he is on Frox and Friends getting interviewed, talking about a problem that, frankly, Andy, and I'll let you have the word after the clip.
You'll see me on the other side?
I'll see you on the other side of this, because I think when we're talking about the problem of the beta male in America today, you've got to be at ground zero for one of the reasons, one of the problems. All right, here we go.
Mind is blown on this thing. Can you believe this? I mean, where is culture going at right. this point? Why is there such a war on masculinity? There is. I mean, the worst thing you can be in America today is a white heterosexual Christian male. I mean, there's an all-out war on people.
Pause. So, I mean, just for folks, I just want to clarify. Masculinity is white Christian male.
Yeah, that's
okay,
a new thing.
Go ahead.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I don't understand why there is just such a battle just to be masculine. Why is it? And then you're offensive if you are. I mean, I'm going to have people who are going to get on here. They're going to see the little segment that we put on Twitter or whatever, this, and they're going to say, oh, my gosh, it's a guy in a cowboy hat. What does he know? Well, tonight you'll probably eat meat, and a guy in a cowboy hat probably raised that cow. So, you know, it's just... It's okay to be a man.
Well, and being masculine doesn't mean you can't be a gentleman. When I first met you, when you came on set, I loved it. You shook my hand and you tipped your hat.
Didn't
I? It was so cute. I'm married. You won't believe this. I'm married to a lumberjack, a professional lumberjack.
And wow.
And he happens to be a congressman. But I married him because
he was
a lumberjack.
Wow, what a skill. What a skill.
I don't think women really like that beta male thing. What's
they
up
don't.
With that?
You know what women like? They like men. They like men that are men and men that are confident in being men.
Yes.
And I'm giving you permission right now, America, be masculine. If you're a man, there's no, what's the word, misandry? We talk about misogyny.
Mm-hmm.
What is the word? Is it misandry? Where you have
what?
man-haters. These right. people that are, you know, so men can't speak their mind. They can't make jokes. They can't, you know, burp and scratch themselves. It's okay, boys. Scratch yourselves.
Just not right now.
I'm not sure.
Niles Fox.
Now, Andy, I'm going to put it to you right now. Chad yeah. Prather has given you permission to be masculine. Why won't you be?
Well, let me ask you a question, Sam. The way he says masculine, does he sound a little fey to you? Am I right?
I think what you guys are most...
That's Southern. I think you're mixing up Southern.
Is he a little light in the loafers, yeah. as Johnny Carson used to say?
Also, Southern guys are gay. That is number one. But number
that guy
two,
is so gay, I wanted to sleep with him just on the basis of that monologue.
Well, is it? What
but
is
Andy, can, let me here's the question. Wait a second. I just want to get to this. Do you think that you could ever, ever... project yourself as a masculine man, being as Jewy as you are?
Well, you know, this is right in my wheelhouse, Sam, because I do wear cowboy hats, and I do wear spurs, and I do square dance around the city every morning. And people think I'm gay.
What I'm thinking, I just think it's the most alpha behavior possible, if we're being objective, is to get makeup put on, go into a studio in Midtown Manhattan, and bitch and whine about not being able to be a man. That's what Dirty Harry would do. If he would be like, I don't have time to solve cases.
Well,
I have to do a YouTube series. Please like my page. Support me on Patreon. Like the page. Thank you.
To be fair.
Who's buying this?
To be fair.
No one likes this guy.
To be fair.
Nobody follows this guy, though, right? He's not like a popular dude.
What are you talking about? He's on TV.
He's like Richard Spencer. Is he Richard Spencer? Famous?
To be fair, Dirty Harry also wearing makeup.
Right. Oh, fair. Good point. Good point.
Only, that's the only.
I know. I just loved like the new brand of like these guys who it's like, like self-claimed alpha males spend their entirety like bitching on media
platforms.
This
is not even new.
It's the most jacked male behavior imaginable.
I got a call on back when Air America, back in 2006, where I remember Rush Limbaugh at that time talking about the wussification and the feminication of men. And
Rush Limbaugh?
Yes, and it was the harbinger of this was Dick Durbin wearing a pink tie on the floor of the Senate.
Ha ha, Dick Durbin's a hobo.
It kind of reminds me of the talk we had with Richard Wolff yesterday, where he's like, if capitalism is so confident that it's the greatest system on earth, why not allow some more options and people can choose?
There you go.
It's like,
uh-oh, hello, goodbye, democracy, hello, communism, come on, kid.
I mean, but also, not for nothing, the Hollywood Reporter cover that triggered this whole incident was actually it was called The Triumph of the Beta Male, and it featured the men from the show Silicon Valley. And I would just like to point out that those guys are dicks as well, and not particularly feminist in their reputation.
The era of the pajama boy is over.
There you go.
Oh my God! So I'm starting to learn so many things about. Ever since that Louis C.K. thing, I'm learning so many negative things about comedians that I never thought were possible.
What do you mean, like Chad Prather?
Oh, I wasn't talking about.
No, I'm talking about
actors.
Louis C.K. I can't stop talking about him, so I figured I'd continue.
You can draw a direct line from that little midget's pink tie on C-SPAN to those bastards on Variety.
Little it's person, the same it's thing. A little person.
All right, Andy, I want to
really?
Get
into what's the matter. What are you a dwarf?
I want to get into some Dennis Miller stuff that we have.
Oh,
found.
He's back! He's back, everybody.
Yeah, he's back. He is back now. Before we do that, first, tell me, where are you? What are you doing? Where are you spreading your beta-ness?
You know, I'm so glad because you don't give me nearly enough chance to plug my gigs, and it's very disturbing to me. I'm in Vancouver, right?
Mm.
Or when I get
it's
here, I call when
I
kill and I call it Bankcouver. You know what I'm saying? When I hit the stage?
I don't get it. Bankcouver.
Like I'm killing you can I'm money in the bank. You could take that to the bank like Beretta used to do before he killed someone.
No, I remember. He didn't kill anybody. He was a cop.
No. He went back to get his gun. That's right. I'm sorry.
Okay. So wait, so you're in Vancouver, which you call it that way because you make so much bank there. Is that
well,
it?
Well, I thought it meant more like killing. I'm kill. I saw it was like I kill. Like,
now,
it's a bad joke. It's just a bad joke.
I was going to say, is this the type of comedy routine that people can expect if they come out tonight in Vancouver?
Well, I'm part of here at the JFL Northwest, and I'm hosting the alternative show. And I think that
is that right?
Come
is
out,
there a Just for Laughs?
It's a Just for Laughs joint.
Ah, okay.
People, I've found now that people are vastly disappointed with what they thought the show would be. But then when they see my, get up and go-ness.
Who's on that show tonight? Like, who's doing alternative comedy in Just for Laughs West? I mean, you don't know.
Oh, you want, like, names? You want me to prove?
I don't know. I'm just curious because I have no
idea. Okay, who's on the show tonight is Charlie Demers, who's great.
Don't know.
Rhea Butcher?
Nope.
You know her. She's married to Cameron Esposito. Why do I sound like an old booker? Todd Barry's on the show.
Who?
Todd Barry. He's a small Jewish.
No,
I know
Todd. Of course, I know Todd. I didn't realize.
Katie Ellen Humphreys and Graham Clark, who's the best.
I don't. Man, I'm so out of it. I just know Todd. Everybody else.
Yeah,
must
but
be
why
Andrew.
Should you know every? I mean, this is you. You don't have time.
No, I don't have time. I don't have time.
You're changing the world.
And let's continue to do that by slagging Dennis Miller.
That's right.
Saving the world this way. Okay, this is a clip of Dennis Miller. If you could just ease it up just a little bit so I can see the date on this. This is this is him at the Kravis Center.
It's an ad for the he's coming to the Kravis Center.
Oh, I see. Okay.
January 23rd, 2008.
This is when it went up. So he's coming to the Kravis Center. This is the show that's going on. He's back on the road, Andy.
Oh, no. This
killer
is so
new
great.
Material. Check
I'm going to follow him like the Grateful Dead.
Here you go.
5-time Emmy Award winner, known for his sharp, edgy wit.
Our education system in California, we got problems there. Any female teachers watching the show tonight, you got to quit dating the students. When I was 14 years old, my teacher wouldn't let me bang the erasers.
Look out for Dennis Miller, serving up his refreshingly outspoken take on today's hottest topics at the Kravis Center, March 31st at 8 p.m.
And that was what they picked!
That's the only joke!
That was what they picked!
Is that a thing?
Was what they picked as the best.
That was it.
That was the like the sizzle to get you to buy a ticket.
Which one should we put on the sizzle reel? How about the bang erasers? That one always kills.
Sometimes he would faint, Dennis Miller. He was so excited about the reference that he couldn't even get through the premise. He was so excited. He was bang the erasers. I'm going to say bang the erasers tonight, Choo Choo. Watch the reaction.
Wow, that is, I imagine that thing sold out big time. You know what I like, too, is that they're laughing through his setup. Will you just want to play that again? Like, you can hear them laughing as he's doing the setup.
No, that's not real. That can't be real laughing.
No,
right? That sounds like,
not.
Like a can of comedy that was produced in 52.
A can.
Hold on,
Lisa.
Go right.
That's not laughter I meant. Guys, I'm not on my game. It's the morning. I get sunny in the afternoon.
Any female teachers watching the show tonight? You got to quit dating the students. When I was
14
years old, my teacher wouldn't let me.
There you go.
I think that might be a track.
That's a fake thing. There's not even in a room. I mean, I can't see on my thing. Is he live?
Oh, yeah. He was live. He was live when he was delivering that.
What a horrible tour. I'm opening up for him, too, and I am so not looking forward to this.
You're not opening up for Dennis.
No.
Of course not.
When have I ever
said
anything?
It's like
really
teaches.
All right, so now this.
You're like Bathsheba.
When is this from, Matt? Just to scroll down.
Stop it.
Okay, this was from January.
He's back. He's trying to get
back. This is now 2.5 months ago, but he needed to hype it before he went on the road. This is Dennis Miller, his take on Snowflake Generation. Apparently, this is Adam Carolla has a new movie. Has that come out yet, Generation Snowflake?
You talk about where they go to the college campuses?
Yeah.
With Dennis, with the funniest man in show business, Dennis Prager?
Maybe. I don't know.
That's the guy he's going on to the thing to say why safe spaces. I don't think it's ever going to be made. That's my prediction. It will never be made.
Oh, okay. So this is just a promo for Generation Snowflake.
Yeah.
I see. And the movie hasn't been made yet. This is what it's like.
They're
an Indiegogo or something.
Yes, they're literally playing this promo, and then they're just going to build a segment. So we're going to go from this horrifying promo to Stuart Varney and Dennis Miller talking about how great the promo is. Yeah.
Now, you should know, hold on for one second, you should know that it's a series of college students in front of essentially what amounts to either a green screen or a large television with, like, images of academic-looking buildings behind them.
It's not based in reality. It's based on your reality.
Wait, hold on a second.
Hold on, pull it back. We got to start at the beginning of this, man. Don't cheat us out of hearing all the Generation Snowflake people. It starts with Bob De Niro.
Because it's not just what he says. It's how he says it.
Crazy. In movie terms, when you started school, the country was an inspiring, uplifting drama. You're graduating into a tragic, dumbass comedy.
Our commitment to diversity means that nobody graduates until they think just the right way.
At Utopia University, there are no violent words to hurt me.
I will punch you if you're a fascist.
I'm going to be the next Che Guevara.
We speak out against privilege.
We've checked our privilege.
Welcome to Utopia U.
A wonderful place to learn that everything your parents taught you is wrong.
It's all here at Utopia U, man.
It's not based in reality.
It's based on your reality.
Wait, hold on a second. That campus doesn't really exist, does it? That doesn't even look like parody to me. You could run that after Don Lemon's show on CNN, and it would just play like a commercial.
I think Mr. Crawler is onto something.
Hold on, pause it for one second.
Who's this guy? Now I can see it now.
Now it's Stuart Varney. The take on that... I guess that was a parody, is what they're calling it, and so now.
Because that when did they make the sound of the record stopping, or was that you?
No, that was them. It was like that was Corolla interrupting, going like, "Hey, wait a second, this isn't real. I thought it was."
I like how he came out with like that's not even like a joke. It's like real.
you know where they're shooting this?
Where?
This is, now that I'm looking at it, it's the image of Corolla, and Corolla had a second house in L.A. years and years ago. I imagine he has another one, and this must be his man cave, because he's got the old man show sign behind there and a couple of video games. So he's doing this in his own, house.
It's pretty I'm so surprised about that.
Yeah.
Divergent Fortunes.
Here we go.
Jimmy Kimmel, Adam Carolla. Jesus Christ.
And here is, let's get to the Stuart Varney segment with...
He's his new Jack Parr.
Dennis Miller.
I think Mr. Crawler is onto something. He's going after the PC movement on colleges, which frankly, Dennis, really does drive me insane. Do you remember Mario Savio in California, the free speech movement at Berkeley? He started it when students were demonstrating for free speech, and look at it now. I think it's incredible.
Well, listen, first off, I'd have to say I like the pedigree on that project because I think Adam Carolla is the Will Rogers of his generation, and I think Dennis Prager is in there too. And I can definitely assure you that as far as astute social observers named Dennis, he's the best of them. But I would say that I find it ironic that the colleges are now in such lockdown. You know, you realize, Stuart, Jesus Christ could appear on a college campus right now and change water into wine, and he would be frog-walked off by the campus cops because he killed some microorganisms in the wine.
Oh, God, this guy is so terrible.
From the greatest generation to the greatest.
Hold on, wait a second. So Jesus could show up at college, turn water into wine, and he would get frog march off of campus because he killed some microorganisms in the wine?
I guess that's like news to all of the animals that are scientifically tested on every single college campus in America.
Why would microorganisms in the wine be killed?
Because
it's amazing. These guys have not ever been on a college campus. What do you think Dennis Miller is doing research on college campuses? Like hiding behind trees and hearing how the kids talk? They're just liars. They're just liars. They've made up. I went back to my school where I did comedy, right? I'm not comedy. Where I went to school, Binghamton.
Yeah.
These kids were edgier than, well, not edgy, but these none of what I heard was going to happen was true.
Oh, that all the warning that you had about how you'd be drummed off campus if you said anything too risque?
Well, no, this is I'm being honest. This is the first campus I've been back to since college. So I'm not like these idiots who know nothing. They literally, can you imagine Adam Carolla strolling around campus I mean, it's just complete lies.
Total I could lies. Definitely see Adam Carolla getting frog marked off of a college campus, but that would have very little to do with any, like, humor.
Right, exactly.
I can see a lot of scenarios.
What does that mean, frog? I heard Joseph Wilson say that years ago. Frog
it's like perp walk.
Oh, okay.
You frog march, I think, because you're chained. I'm not exactly sure.
Actually, they wouldn't frog march Jesus off of a campus because he was Arab. So
all right.
You stand correct.
There were a lot of Muslims around that.
There were a lot of Muslims that they got along, and Jesus was very cool with them.
We have a third clip now of Dennis Miller. He's on the Hammer and Nigel show. This is, what's the date on this? This is just from like literally a week and a half ago. He's talking, and it's an exclusive that they have. he talks
exclusive
about...
from the Kravitz Center.
Dennis Miller talks Twitter, Dems, and Indy. And I guess Indy, maybe this is from Indianapolis.
Indiana.
Oh,
Indianapolis,
okay.
Or whatever, yeah.
Weekend Update guy, longtime SNL alum, started some movies. At what point did you kind of find yourself sort of disagreeing with some of the philosophies that were coming out of Hollywood and California in general?
Pause it for 1 second, because I thought he was going to say, at what point did you find your career was completely over? When did that happen?
At what point did you realize that you were at best a fourth string guest for Bill O'Reilly, who you knew eventually that was going to blow up? I would love that. The astute Midwestern AM host. Did you realize that your comedy, what seemed somewhat innovative in the 80s, seemed redundant and annoying with dated references now? Your response, Dennis Miller.
There's a couple things. I know the left looks at Hillary and they hear, you know, trumpets in the back. I don't get that. I don't look at, to me, Pelosi is in more over her head than a gay dwarf hitting on Shaq. She never
That is the greatest reference I've ever heard.
So you can get some sleep at night. She's
wait a second. Pause it. First off, it sounds to me like, you know, it sounds like you're speaking on a speakerphone, but the response to that question, I'm wondering if it's actually Dennis Miller or if they didn't do one of those things like when people call in with the recording. Go back to the – let's hear the question with the response, because it doesn't seem to be – it seems to be like, oh, they're going to ask you a question about politics. All right, just play this. It seems like almost like the Dennis Miller doll. Play it.
Agreeing with some of the philosophies that were coming out of Hollywood and California in general.
There's a couple things. I know the left looks at Hillary and they hear, you know, trumpets in the back. I don't get that.
Pause.
He's laughing.
To me, Pelosi.
No, it can't be the Dennis Miller doll, because the Dennis Miller doll did have complete sentences.
No, I know it's not the Dennis Miller doll, but it sounds
so you're
like,
saying they're just generic, it's generic questions,
but
right?
The first
generic
part.
Generic questions, and he just recorded some like generic criticism.
He pre-recorded.
That's what I think.
They look at Hillary Clinton and Trump's in the background. Jack's dick over a dwarf's head. That's literally what he just said.
The question was, when did you first realize that you didn't agree with the Hollywood philosophy? And he goes, the left looks at Hillary Clinton with trumpets in the background. He's not answering the question.
Well, guys, maybe he'll bring it home to land.
All right, let's see.
Is in more over her head than a gay dwarf hitting on Shaq. She never shuts up. It's just occasionally you have to hood her like a falcon so you can get some sleep at night. She's always standing there with that come dither look, blinking away like she's signaling the Carpathia. She hit an iceberg. I'd see her with a speaker of the house gavel. I'd feel like Heston waking up in the field and the chimp was on top of the pony.
He came up with come dither before that show. He thinks that's funny to take come hither and say Hillary, when she does it, she's come dither. What right-wing idiot is going to like this guy? What is he doing that's going to like him?
I don't even understand. There's no way Hammer and Nigel got that joke, incidentally, either. They're just... Go ahead.
go through life looking like you're perpetually witnessing the docking of the Hindenburg.
So oh, God. Her, current.
And they talk about Hillary. What's Hillary got going for, except the fact she was hoping women would vote for her because they know that she's been cheated on more frequently than a blind woman playing Scrabble with gypsies.
With who?
Gypsies.
A blind woman playing Scrabble with 50 cents. Is that what he said?
No, with gypsies.
You know, I thought he was bringing 50
cents into
it. You
know, all those gypsies who love to cheat at Scrabble.
Very
stream
of consciousness.
And let me tell you, I'm gayer than the lollipop kids off the set during The Wizard of Oz back in Culver City with an orgy on the third floor section with a tenement.
That made more sense. The common problem in impersonating Dennis Miller, your tangent's making more sense. I prefer depressed Dennis Miller.
Let's keep hearing this. Bring that back. Go ahead.
They were celebrating too many idiots over there. Now, I know the guys on the right are like doofuses. They're like the town elders from Footloose. But I can't wake up every day and watch a guy like Trump and have people say that he's Adolf Hitler. And I just can't play that game anymore. He's not like Adolf Hitler. Adolf Hitler's like Adolf Hitler.
Oh, that's
Dennis,
very
do you
smart.
Miss you know, the he, grind of the daily radio thing. Show?
He knows that the one person's not the other person.
Hey, guys, let's play Hitler.
Because
no, there's
he didn't
no more
answer
politics.
That question at all about when you first found out you went.
That was it.
All right, let's hear the next one. Let's see.
Yeah.
Oh, that was it? It's over?
Well, no, there's no more politics. Go ahead. If you want to see what it transitions to
I'm just
now.
Curious. Yeah, I just want to see because I'm just not convinced that this was a live Dennis Miller.
I miss that. Be a rickshaw driver in Beijing. And that, you know, I miss that too. When I was a bareback rickshaw driver that they used to hit with a wet piece of balled up rope. What are you kidding?
See, but this is what we miss every day of this.
Three hours
of Dennis Miller every day.
Oh. No, I did 8 years, and I said, "Man, I was starting to like callers."
Now he's actually responding to the thing. So.
So it's real, isn't it, Sam?
It turns out to be real. That makes it even worse, I think.
It was real, Jew Jones.
It would be super awesome if he did that. I mean, like where he just did all these morning interviews around the country with just sort of like five different pre-taped answers, whatever the question was.
So Dennis, how long are you going to be in town for?
Nancy I'm going to be here for as long as the Boogie Nights version director's cut.
Dennis, I've been here longer than Methuselah's hair when Rapunzel. That's what I hope happens to him. I hope that he just starts losing it like that.
Did you have one, Matt? No, he didn't have
one. God, he's going to use that five more times, too.
Well, let's hear it. I can't get enough of it personally.
What's that?
Do we have another one?
What do we use? No, that's it, right? Oh, do we have one more?
Apparently, we have one more.
Oh, come on. This is gold.
Wait, now, when was this? When is this one from?
This is February
21st. Wow, this is only a couple of weeks ago. And it's, I guess, is this the Independence? Is this Duff? Is that Kennedy? Kennedy, not Kennedy. Duff.
Kennedy, yes.
It's Kennedy.
Duff.
It was another VJ.
Duff is not. Duff's a nice person.
Duff is a nice person.
Duff's a good guy.
This is Kennedy, and apparently Dennis Miller is on to talk about how Kathy Griffin wants to host the White House Correspondents' Dinner.
Have a hard time convincing Kathy Griffin the president is good for a comedian's career. Kathy is refusing to quit while she's behind and has offered to host the White House Correspondents' Dinner if the president attends this year's event. Organizers have yet to respond because they're hoping to book someone more likable, like Kim Jong-un. Joining me now to discuss the president's effect on comedy, a man who would make a perfect host for the White House Correspondents' Dinner, comedian and legend Dennis Miller. You're back. I'm so glad you've returned.
Thanks for having me, Kennedy. I don't know if you've ever done that press corps dinner, but that is an uptight crowd. A lot of sticks up, a lot of tookuses there.
Did you do
That's
it, Dennis?
That's absolutely right, especially in terms of the president. So if they hired someone like Kathy Griffin to be the MC, she would obviously go after the president. It might be entertaining and satisfying for leftist mainstream journalists, but would the president attend?
I think that's one thing about Trump. I think he's, I don't know, appropriate he ran in the GOP because an elephant never forgets. And I think he knows she's scrambling right now, and I don't think he's going to be her Stargate back into
you know, back into the cool kid group. I think what happened with Kathy Griffin is she made a bad tactical error. Yeah. I hung out with her one day at the Aspen Comedy Festival. She's cool. She's got great chops. She made a bad tactical error there because, you know, they held up too many heads on YouTube. So to hold the head up was, you know, just bad commerce. And she's scrambling now. And, of course, she'd want to get back in there. I think that would help her. But I'm not sure Trump's willing to help her.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And it reminds me of Rosie O'Donnell dressing up to play Steve Bannon for SNL. And SNL did not ask her to play that character, oddly enough. So there's obviously anti-Trump mood in comedy right now. Is there any way to salvage that dinner, to make it entertaining, to put the president in the kind of light that I think is befitting a president, so the president's allowed to be self-deprecating and also allowing
the pause.
A
it feels like something went wrong with this interview, and Kennedy's like vamping for like she was bummed that he didn't make a joke about. And that's like we got to scramble. Can you hear me? Like somebody's in her ear going, like we got to make this work.
Something awesome is happening here.
Oh, let's
Dennis see. Miller's depression is returning.
Okay, good.
This is a great segment. Oh, I'm very excited about it.
This is what you want. He's in his wheelhouse now.
Now we're back. Now we're getting back home.
And also allowing a comic to do what they do best. If not you, who?
Well, I wouldn't do it again. I did it once with Bush 41, and I just remember it being uptight. I got out alive, but I just remember the whole crowd, not Bush, not his wife, they're pretty cool, but the whole crowd is like clutching pearls. Like it's like the day Murph the Surf, the jewel thief, checked into the Fontainebleau. Everybody was checking their pearls in the lobby. Very
Murph
uptight
the
crowd,
Murph the
so I wouldn't
she
do it. But I would think that Kathy's not going to end up doing it. If I was Kathy, I would remember that at some point, it seems like Roseanne has had this light bulb go off.
Yes.
The hoi polloi are the people who pay for tickets. The other people, the people she pleased with the beheading shot, are people who always want comps. You got to play to the people who are willing to put cash on the barrel head. And I think that's where Rosie's at right now. By the way, she looks great. Does she not look beautiful in all this press she's doing?
No, I think it's fantastic, and I think it's a really smart move on her part because it's very authentic that her character would be a Trump supporter. And that's what she's doing. She's honoring the character. And I think the most shocking thing you can do in comedy right
her
now.
Her character would have been a Trump supporter.
President. So, you know, it speaks to her ultimate aim. And also, I think it's really funny how much she hates Hillary.
Yeah. Well, listen, I think Rosie started out, if you remember, when was she first on your radar? When she said that she was a domestic goddess. And I think if you go back to the last election and see who Trump did well with on the
guys,
side,
I can't
this
take
could
it.
Be the worst.
This is worse than
the
State of the Union.
Wow.
Was Kennedy this
I
brutal?
I like Kathy
when she
Griffin.
Was...
She's kind of good. She's, you know, but she hurt her commerce. You don't want to hurt your commerce, babe. She's getting to her. You mean what she gets? That's not even a word that you would use. She's a working comedian. She doesn't do commerce.
He's like a lackluster drunk at a
she
bar.
She really heard her merchandise.
Yeah, sure.
Bah, bah,
her, she used to have you have joint merchandise production deals, which she undermined in the cross-segment demo. But yeah, I did that gig 30
poor
years
tactic.
Ago. It was kind of boring.
Poor tactic.
It's worse than the boilerplate language in the SAG-AFTRA contract when it comes to ancillary rights.
Was Kennedy this
Dennis
brutal?
Miller, Dennis Miller.
She's worse.
When she was introducing like Green Day videos, whatever the hell.
No,
she
she's worse. She's
so
terrible.
Boring.
I've bantered with her on Twitter. She's a horrible human.
I like how they just complained in the last segment about social justice warriors on campus who are like, "Oh, don't wear racist Halloween costumes," but they can't handle a little effigy decapitation.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, it doesn't
trigger
be fit.
Much.
It doesn't be fit.
Also, I really do appreciate Dennis Miller giving other comedians tactical career advice.
Yeah.
You got to stay current.
This guy,
you
like,
know what their problem is? Your references are out of date. You got to stay current with the references, like the A-Team.
You gotta attach yourself to a shooting star, a guy who's ascending like Billy O'Reilly.
Billy O'Reilly.
This might have been the right call back in like 2000 or whenever
right.
he actually did it.
Right.
Those were the days. It was 2003.
Oh, man. I think it's something like I used to like to watch really bad comedy because it would make me laugh. You know, made me laugh because it was so bad. But now I can't watch bad comedy anymore. But I can watch. I could watch this. I really could watch this forever because it's just so it's so intense and it's just so far. If people knew what he was like. in the 90s. I mean, I don't know if I could ever watch it again, but it's like a different human. Well, not a different human. I guess he was always a horrible man.
But
it does have a certain pathos to it.
It is interesting how he insists on going onto these shows, but also then be a, like a buzzkill.
I actually was wondering, I remember when we played that truly horrifying clip of Dennis Miller saying that if his tax dollars were going to go to sort of like minimal social investment, that he wanted to have like personal meetings with somebody getting unemployment.
Oh, right. Yes, I do remember.
And
that.
We've talked for ages about how sociopathic and bizarre and creepy and just weird that was. But the more I watch him, my empathy sort of grows. And I feel like he wants to have the personal oversight of his tax dollars so he can have a friend. He needs to socialize.
I'm spending tax dollars on you. Hang out with me.
Come on. I'm giving you my tax dollars. Let's have a ring ding bar together. And you can tell me about your job interviews or something. I don't know.
Come on. I just want to get, I haven't eaten all day. Yeah, it's sort of like, I mean, it's sort of like Todd Berry a little bit. There's Todd always gets you to go out to eat with him. That was back in the day.
And it's a series of complaints. But the other thing is, Dennis Miller, he's not a bright person. I'm sorry to say it. I don't usually like saying that, although that was popular in my family. But he's covering up not a particularly perceptive mind with tons and tons of references. Because in the old days, Kevin Rooney would write for him. He had David Feldman. He had people who knew what they were talking about writing for him. Right. He doesn't know a thing.
No, he doesn't. And I think he's like basically said, like, I don't have to anymore.
It's like Caligula. Yeah, that was like Saddam Hussein. Anyways, Bush needs to bomb everyone. I will take my Leno appearance now. That was the heyday.
Good luck with your truffles, France.
It's so terrible. But you know what? This is the whole thing that's weird. I remember arguing with right-wing people when I was a kid, and this is like off the chart. They have no argument now. They're just completely like, we're evil, and we just have to come up with a cover story of why we're evil. It's never been so disconnected from reality. And I remember the Gulf of Tonkin resolution.
Andy, what after you leave Vancouver, where do you go? Just go home for the rest of the year? What do you do?
I go home to field my calls from the weekend, and I go back. Now, boys, like, I want to say, do you know that? Are you mocking me with that photo of me? Do you know where that photo is from?
No.
That you have?
No.
That's me on a show called Raising Dad as a mathematics teacher. And you knew that, right?
No.
No, you knew it was a horrible shot, though, right?
Did not know that.
I did not know that.
No. Did not know.
Look at that vest.
Would you like us to use a different photo?
I don't care. I really don't care because I kind of like looking at it.
I think you look cute.
All right, so Andy, honestly, let's do with some plugs. After Vancouver, it's what? Back to Orange County?
No, it's I'm in the Valley now. Don't
No, I'm
don't,
saying with your performances.
Oh, you know, don't I have a person who has my schedule or
where's
it's
your
really bad. I'm doing the Montreal Festival this year.
Okay, when's that?
That's going to be at the end of July.
All right. And that's where you do your famous industry thing. You doing that again?
I'm doing that again.
State of the industry.
And, I have, you know what I have now? I can't keep forgetting to plug what I have. And it's like, it must be a great show if I won't talk about it. I have a podcast.
It is
Thought Spiral.
Thought Spiral. Yeah. It's just me and my friend Josh, two Jews.
Now, what do you do when you're on the road? What do you do when you're on the road?
Yeah. And we're doing me on the road? What?
No, when you're on the road, how do you do it?
Oh, I don't. I've only done it once on the road. Mostly on the road, I do with my comedies. When I do on the road.
No, I understand.
No,
I'm saying if you're on the road.
No, no, we don't. No, I do it once a week. Here's what we do. It's once a week. It's Monday night. Josh literally lives four blocks away from me, so that's how we do it.
I love it.
Otherwise,
it's a funny
if I had
pod
to operate the equipment, it would be over.
Andy,
it's a funny pod.
As always, always a pleasure.
I love you guys so much. I kind of go, why am I not in the studio at some point? I don't
well,
get it.
Every time I find out you're in New York, I find out afterwards. You never tell me before.
I was
and
there.
One of the Dennis Miller, I really do kind of want to go to one of those Dennis Miller concerts if
yeah,
I can. Not, you don't
that
have to pay for it, but I'll go.
Same. I'll
let's
go
make
with
it
you
happen.
It'll be great.
All right.
It'll be great. I love you guys.
Love you
too.
Thank you.
Have a good weekend.
Bye.
Bop, Andy bop, Kindler, bop. Ladies and gentlemen. Bop, Andy Kindler. Bop. All right, we're going to take a quick break and head in.
We have a Jimmy Reefer cake.
Oh, we do have a Jimmy Reefer cake song? All right, let's play that. Folks, just a reminder, it is your support that makes this show possible. You can become a member today by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. Your membership makes the free show possible, and as a way of saying thank you, we give you extra content every day. Let's hear this Jimmy Reefer cake song. Don't forget TMBS and Jamie's Patreon, and she's got her new podcast is up via the Patreon page at patreon.com/JamiePeck. All right, here's Jimmy Reefer cake song.
It's called Just Bashing Trump Won't Work. It's dedicated to Michael.
Ooh.
Oh, nice. I agree.
Happy casual Friday, everybody. Hopefully, Brooks is not hosting, and you'll be able to hear my song this week. All this talk just bashing Trump is bringing them down, oh no. They think it's all in the bag. Just look around. I fear the Dems are going down. But I hope they're thinking of me as they lay out their strategy. Just bashing Trump won't work. It just makes it worse. So I'm singing about legal weed again. Milk toast won't work. It just makes it worse. I'd support Tulsi Gabbard instead. But Brooksy in his bubble whining and jerking off to Kamala Harris. She used to laugh about weed because she used to need to kiss up to authoritarians. That's why Hillary didn't work. She just made it worse. So I'm singing about legal weed again. And when the DNC rigs the primary again, they'll blame it on Jill Stein and Putin. They're never gonna stop, never gonna stop. No, no, no. Won't stop being hypocrites. Yeah.
Wow, that is, here we go.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
When he's good, he's good.
Yeah, yeah. I'm definitely, if hunting. I ever have kids, I've got to have a collection of these songs, but I'm ever concerned about their marijuana use. You don't want to end up like this.
Hunting. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break, head into the fun half. We're going to have a fairly short fun half today, but still an extra like 40 minutes of material. Number 646-257-3920, 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half.